finish your presentation by pointing out the fact that we maybe focus on the question of sharing information and then not sharing information. What is the problem of that?
Yes.
This could be very good for the society by sharing information. But I think in France, maybe this is our case. I don't know if the other people at home are agree with me. I think the question of sharing information, this is systematically the question we ask in France. Maybe in English-speaking countries like in Australia, the United States, the question is not asked, whereas in that side. So this is a big fear we have, for example, when you talked about data collaborative and separate from the private to government. But the question we ask is, where is the frontier,
mm-hmm.
where is the boundary
right.
between the private sector and
right.
public sector?
Right.
Actually,
right.
this is a very big question for us. So,
yeah.
Do you have, I don't
Yeah, no, I think absolutely.
Really
and what I hope I didn't sound as being the advocate or promoter here of data collaborative. I'm just saying is that it's a phenomenon that as especially the research community, we really have to take stock. And I think the problem the problem you identified is basically a pretty straightforward problem that we have refused to address, and it's the problem of secondary use of data. Because everything that I've just illustrated is based upon secondary use of data, or tertiary use or whatever, because secondary use is kind of cute these days, as if there is no more other things, which basically is that the data was collected for one purpose and is then being used for another purpose. In the past, fair information practices had a clear mark that the information needs to be used for the purpose that was collected. That doesn't mean there were exemptions. But big data, as we all know, has basically eradicated fair information practices. And now it's basically common practice to use it for other purposes. As a society, to answer your question, when is the frontier? As a society, we need to decide what are appropriate and inappropriate secondary uses. And that would solve many of your concerns.
Yeah.
Because if we don't have that kind of, and this is not, anyway, a research question, this is a normative kind of, and of course it could be informed by examples of the potential harm or benefits. But I think absent a public conversation and some kind of guidance on where's the red line of secondary use, or under what conditions can you have secondary use, which includes quite often then an obligation to document value, which is why we need a methodology to document value or the anticipated benefit. If we don't have that, it's going to be a very limited debate. It's going to be about is data sharing good or bad? Well, it depends, right? And I think some things are good and some things are bad. It's both informed by potential value, but it's also a normative reflection. Sometimes in some countries you will say no, this goes way too far. In other countries it might be less, but I think we need to have that debate.
Sort of wondering. Seeing as you're also involved in expertise in the European Union, whether there's a terms of the debate or the questions that people are asking or discussing are different in Europe or in the US. For example, you didn't talk, I was surprised not to hear things like the extension of the notion of data of public interest in the law, which is a trend that we're starting to see in Europe.
Yeah.
And it was not present in your presentation. This struck me as odd coming from a European perspective. So I don't know if you have any.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I already went over time, so there are multiple ways we could deepen it, right? And so yeah, meaning, of course, GDPR, is basically, an iteration of what was there before, and what was there before was, based upon the FIPS to a large extent. And so clearly, we still have some notions there. but that doesn't mean, anyway, and I think, anyway, GDPR has clearly, provided for some clarity and confusion. And the good thing about GDPR is that everyone starts from the same, anyway, the same basis, as opposed to where exactly in other countries, quite often there is a different basis, like, anyway, because there's different legislation for different sectors, right? And so, and that in itself already creates some kind of tension. So it's clearly different, but where it's really different is in the developing world, right? Where they start realizing they should perhaps pay attention to privacy. And so in many emerging economies, privacy legislation is now being considered, but that's also where most of the experimentation of data collaboration quite often happens, right? And I'm not saying this is good or bad, right? But clearly, the context determines what is feasible. I mean, the EDPS is now, anyway, I don't know whether, but they were last time when I met them in Brussels, is basically, although we don't need to use that, is actually now trying to come up with guidance, right, on secondary use for research, for instance, right, because there's total confusion whether you can actually still, anyway, use data for research purposes and that kind of stuff. And so, and obviously under GDPR you can. And so that's going to emerge, and I think it's going to be about, anyway, what bucket does data collaboration eventually fit in? But also what you see more and more, exactly, right? So you have three countries. You have Estonia, you have the UK, and you have France that already has legislation where statistical agencies can mandate opening of corporate data for statistical purposes. And so so you see that also emerging. And so anyway, so you have all this, anyway, trends happening that on the one hand you strengthen, on the other hand you loosen, on the other hand you give special actors special permission to have access to certain kind of data. And especially the statistical agencies are having a very public voice that they are the data stewards of a country and need to have access to data collected within the country. That's, anyway, again, for certain countries that's totally acceptable, and other countries that might be problematic, right? Depending on what's the frame of access.
I have a question related to that that's less normative but more descriptive in a way.
Yeah.
Because you have so many data on those data collaboration. And I was wondering if you have an idea or maybe already a model of what would link a country-specific public political environment to a specific type
right.
of collaboration.
Yeah.
Do you see a link?
Yeah.
And what questions?
We have not, I mean, that's like one of the, anyway, fields I would love to explore, right? So, which is then, anyway, what are the, what are variables that inform selection of operation models, variables that inform prevalence of certain kinds of models in certain kinds of countries, or prevalence of certain kinds of sectors. And so all that is work that needs to be done, right? But I think what we have right now, at least we have now a universe to study, right? And so before we didn't have that universe. And so now we have at least, anyway, is it fully representative of the practice? No. But it's the most, anyway, the most example. So at least we have at least some volume that we can now analyze.
And so you have practices in Europe, the US, and Southern America. Do you have data in Asia?
Yeah. I mean, you go to the data repository. And again, it's not perfect yet. We're working on it, right? So now we need to deepen this more and more. Because the more we learn, the more we now have, anyway, new ways of tagging the information, right? So that we can actually filter better on what kind of things we have. But we first had to have the larger landscape. But it's a global phenomenon. And of course, in certain places, it's, like I would say, yeah, no, I'm not going to do any kind of non-data driven estimates. But it's related with, anyway, what I've been arguing is that we have to become more data-driven about actually the data practice, because much of the data discussions is not that much data-driven. And so that's an effort here.
Thank you.
have a question and to follow up.
A question and a reaction. Why are you doing this? Yes.
No, I could we have a look at your last slide, the one with the...
The contractual.
Yes, with the contractual. Yeah. As you imagine, I'm very interested in,
yes.
in that.
Yeah, I would love to get your reaction. Yeah.
I'm not the only one. No, I wanted to touch upon questions of consent and digital colonialism.
We started to
discuss that. And I was wondering how to embed the commons back in those licensing agreements, because they were at the core of the spirit of open data, which then forked out a little and became mostly liberal and instrumental.
Yeah. Well, it's a big discussion, right? So, and again, I was, for many years, I was a big advocate of the commons, and I'm still are, of course, and of the, anyway, the big discussion quite often in the open data space was that have as many data sets as possible, and then you will have the long tail of use, right? So that you don't know, because you don't know, someone might use it. And that, turns out that it's been proven otherwise, that and it has actually had a kind of a negative impact, because it has become another phenomenon of... some of you might have seen the movie The Field of Dreams, right? And then the movie Field of Dreams, the main character at a certain point in time says, if you build it, will they come, right? And of course, we know what the answer is quite often to that that question is that, anyway, if you don't have the user part of building the service, they likely not going to come because they don't see what the value is and that kind of stuff. And many of the commons and the open data initiatives have failed to be demand or understand the possible demand, right? And so many of those commons have become like limited resources. Not all, right? Because, and again, and so which is why we have always advocated for somewhat more of a demand, user-friendly, user-centric kind of design when it comes to commons as well, right? And that doesn't mean you have to limit it to those users, but at least you need to start with a few users that you want to get, anyway, want to generate value, and then see whether that also can then be replicated across other use categories. So that's the discussion, and I'm not saying that one or the other is better, right? I'm just saying is that if you have scarce resources, then you probably want to maximize impact. And that's where you then have to also understand the demand and really think through what is the data that has the highest value. And, by the way, what's the minimum viable data set that you need for certain kinds of questions, as opposed to, anyway, mountains of data that has limited use and, frankly, lots of noise, right?
Yeah, so that would be where the discussion moved from the opposition between more open data advocates and privacy advocates?
Yeah, that's
or are there...
Well, you have the privacy... Well, you have privacy, but you just have pure also... Anyway, I mean, we did a work with New York City and with Costa Rica, where we try to understand user-centric open data, right? And first of all, the concept was totally alien to the open data people. And again, I'm sure they are very well intended, but their main KPI or their main indicator of success is the amount of data sets that are out. Not has it generated an insight that transformed our societies for the better, right? That's a whole different indicator. And it requires then thinking through what are the kinds of insights we want, right, and need. What does that mean with regard to kind of data? And sometimes you have it, sometimes you don't, but at least you have a data strategy then. And so, frankly, we developed a data assessment methodology. It's online. It's on the IADB website. But New York City and Costa Rica were very reluctant to apply it because they saw this as basically performance management, i.e. Evaluation of their efforts, not a tool to actually improve their efforts. And so that's the big challenge, which is, again, why, anyway, I feel every city should have their 100 questions initiative. Should have, what are the 100 questions that, if answered, the city might be better off if then used to make better decisions? If you don't have those 100 questions, it's going to be very hard to determine what are the data assets that you need as a city. Not convinced.
Yeah, thank you very much for the presentation. I have one question that is quite helpful for my students.
Yes, there you go. So at least I have a demand that I can hopefully address.
I'm looking at partnerships between states and digital commons. And one I'm looking at are in France. For example, there is one partnership between OpenStreetMap.
Yes.
And the national states for geolocalized address.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking other partnerships and between the state and digital commons, and I'm not finding them. The most I'm finding are in cities. But maybe you have a broader view, and maybe you have examples of digital commons database or others in the states.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have, and again, the question is, what fits within your digital commons criteria, right? And so, happy to, follow up. So you have those, and then I think, at city level, there's a lot of that collaboration that we are aware of. And again, quite often the challenge is, is sophistication on the government side to understand how it fits with some of their decision making, and so sometimes that's lacking, but sometimes it's also not really understanding what the use cases might be, right? And so, like for instance, in New York City, you have something called CitySense, which is a basically a commons of data assets, but it's it's still, even open data, as we know, the biggest revolution of open government data was that other government agencies suddenly start using data assets of government, right? And so and even that is an uphill battle, so you have the same kind of challenges there, but let's follow up, and I might point you to some examples. I don't have, except for the OpenStreetMaps. I mean, there are a lot of, like for instance, so there are a few that are in the geospatial, a lot in the geospatial field, where they have done some pooling, where they, governments are starting to use more and more. Global Partnership for Sustainable Development data is developing those data commons together with Digital Globe and others. So, and that's demand, i.e. state-driven, right? So there might be a few.
Thanks a lot for your presentation. And also following up on the conversation you were having before, I think it's like a general problem that even not just data, but even official statistics has had to make a case for that our data is valuable and it's being used since there's an impact. So at Paris 21, we've been trying to develop a use of statistics in policy, an indicator to measure and understand how statistics are being used in like national development plans or so. But it's still kind of hard to develop a narrative around the value and impact of data. So it's really good to see that that is an initiative that you're taking a part in. My question more specifically was on, everybody understands, especially in the official statistic agencies, that, there is a lot of data application, there's a lot of competition, and private companies are like the fountains and buckets of the new data providers. But now the question is now shifting to, but for how long are they going to go through that? So, okay, we water to the idea that they do it and in some cases, and one-offs, like you already mentioned, the problem of sustainability, but in your repository of case studies, have you done some kind of like time series analysis of which operation model is most likely to succeed and for how long, like how, which of the cases worked well and which of the ones did not work? Is there like a collection of bad practices or something like that?
Yeah, well, again, that's all part of the next, anyway, we're going to really go deeper. But there are a few, like, anyway, and yeah, meaning, so that's a big, anyway, concern for statistics, for anyone that is dependent on a steady stream of data, especially, anyway, for statistical agencies, if then policymakers are, anyway, relying on those monthly, yearly, consistent, yeah, exactly, yeah, and so that's a different kind of demand where there's need for ongoing access to data assets, right? And so that's a condition, and then the question is what's the right framework, and of course, guess what, corporations come and go, right? So it's not like they are in business forever. And so if you're dependent on that data asset, then you clearly have a challenge. Now, one way to deal with that is, of course, is that is to work with more than one corporation, right? And so where you actually have a data pool where several corporations are joining. And that's, anyway, there are some experiments with that in which is then all at the pre-competitive stage, right? So with pharma, for instance, where they share, anyway, pooling some of the data in a pre-competitive manner with the assumption that they're all going to be better off if they have access to, anyway, a larger data asset. And several, in this case, not statistical agencies, but then several national health agencies and public agencies have access to that as well. And again, meaning some operational models have a longer time frame. Some are set up to, anyway, be shorter time frame. Like prizes and challenges is set up to, but I think prizes and challenges, sometimes they get dismissed, but they are kind of interesting to then come out with premises that you can test over a longer period of time, right? And so they're quite often a stage towards then a longer engagement as such. So again, a long-winded answer for saying I don't have the 5 bullets that I would love to eventually be able to share, except for saying is that there's a lot of experimentation and exactly the challenges to make it systematic, sustainable, and responsible. Everyone is inventing at the moment, right? And I think we need to strengthening the methodologies and an understanding what are the pros and cons of that. And again, it doesn't mean, like, for instance, it depends, like, most statistical agencies are looking at this from an innovation point of view, right? And then, anyway, they actually come up with new kinds of ways of doing things, and then you can then integrate that back in the more official statistical way of doing things.
I mean, they're coming at it from an existential point of view also, that, I mean, we have to internalize external data sources, or part, not the sourcing, but at least the processing and the trusting validation,
yeah,
accreditation,
yeah,
part of it,
yeah,
to just even be relevant.
Absolutely. And it's very interesting, like, for instance, the statistic, and again, statistical agency is a whole different thing, but it's very interesting, the Statistical Agency of New Zealand has now a separate service, as you know, which is actually making corporate data assets ready for others to use. And so they've leveraged their brand as trusted data managers, and are now applying it to actually a service to corporations to make their data assets a thing. And anyway, and then even selling it, right? So because they charge money for it. And so it's kind of interesting. Some would say statistical agencies should not be in the business of business. I'll just say, if you have a clear line between statistical agencies and then whatever you do, it's fine. But again, all those practices are emerging.
I Thank you for your presentation. And I was very interested by the notion that the question and the issue raised by the idea of data invisibles. And I was wondering if you were, in your methodology approach and the way you try to document or illustrate value and good, if you take in account these and if you can tell us a bit more about the consequences.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, so we've done some analysis, like for instance, in the work that we've done, anyway, we did some, as I said, Santiago. We also have done some work in India, leveraging Microsoft data to identify keywords that hint to suicide ideation, and then share that with public health agencies so that they at least have a sense of what red flags might be. And clearly there are tons of digital invisibles. First of all, there are tons of invisibles in India, and so a lot of digital invisibles as well. So you need to take that into account. Quite often you can do that by then really understanding the user base and then comparing that. I mean, what you need for that, that's where, again, statistical agencies are needed for, right? So you need a ground truth to then compare what is the ground truth, and then what is my data set, and so how does that differ, right? But it has, anyway, potentially could have huge implications if it's decided to allocate public services, right? Which is, by the way, the current, as you know, in the US, there is currently the census preparations, and there is, anyway, tons of concerns that certain individuals will not be included, especially immigrants, because now there's potentially a citizenship question, and that will then actually deter actors to take part in the census and as a result become invisible, and as a result will not get the services, because service allocation, meaning budget allocation, is done based upon the census, right? And even election, right? And so if you have invisibles, then suddenly your whole election map is distorted. And quite often they do this on purpose, right? Like the US. And so that's just an example on why, in some cases, it's very important to actually be in the data because it can reinforce social exclusion or lead to, anyway, an understanding of reality that might be skewed to certain kinds of interest. I don't know whether that provides an answer, but we need to, anyway, and I think trying to understand why they are invisible, right? Because it could be a clear purpose there. And then also trying to understand to make them visible in an appropriate manner is gonna be critical.
Yeah. Thank you.
We have time for one more question or one more point if you want to wrap up.
I may have a question, a small vocabulary question.
Yes.
In these kinds of issues with public and private partnerships, institutions who may have a role, 15 years ago, the world multi-stakeholder would have been all over the place. I don't know how it goes now and with this kind.
Yeah.
Of,
well, this, I feel first of all, I feel very bad because, as you know, in my previous life, I did a lot of internet governance work, and one of my first areas that I worked on was on the Digital Opportunity Task Force. And I don't know whether you ever have traced the concept of multi-stakeholder thing, but the Digital Opportunity Task Force was a task force that came out of the G8, and what we tried to do then was to pioneer how decisions were made. And we advocated and actually implemented the first ever multi-sectoral stakeholder model as it relates to deciding for the internet. And that became then the model that WSIS and the internet governance folks adopted. And so I feel very, how would I say, complicated, because indeed it has become a multi-stakeholderism without actually very much meaning on what it actually means. And I have a whole paper on that if you're interested. This is different, right? And but it doesn't mean that, because I only discussed, by the way, again, and I've only scratched the surface, right? I only discussed operational models. I have a whole other thing on governance models, right? Because you could have, if you start thinking about it, and we did like a list of all the variables, ultimately this can be done in, anyway, according to the different variables, in 240 different ways, right? Depending on which variable you tweak, right? And one, important kind of variable is the way it's governed, right? And so in some cases, you clearly would advocate for a multi-stakeholder governance structure, which is why the trustee model sometimes is used. In other cases, this is more of a contractual, bi-party kind of multilateral kind of thing. It depends on the governance structure, it depends on the purpose, it depends on the legitimacy you need with regard to the insights that come out of it and how it is being used. Like data repositories, I would say should always quite often be multi-stakeholder, or at least have some kind of a board that represents not just the interest of the data holders, but also the interest of those that could benefit from the data being released.